everybody, and welcome to Sapphic Survival Guide, where we are happy to be queer to answer your questions. I'm Gina.
And I'm Cheyenne.
Class is now in session, and today we are going to a 200-level class. You've passed Queer Spaces 101, and today we are in Queer Spaces 201. We are in Queer Spaces 2.0, so we got tons of questions on that, and even some more that have trickled in since then. So we want to make sure that we answered everything. You know, we're not going to leave any question open-ended, so we are looping back around to talk all about Queer Spaces today.
Yeah, I feel like that episode was really long too, because it's so hard to find queer spaces, especially queer spaces that aren't like alcohol centric. Like in my town, there's like one gay bar, and like there are some other events or like theaters, just like, you know, the norm. But it's, yeah. I tried to start like a queer space of my own. I think I might've mentioned this in our original episode about queer spaces. I tried to start like a local sapphic event, and I reached out to the local gay bar, and they were like, no, like, we don't think that'll go well. And I'm like, it doesn't have to, like, you don't have to close out like non-sapphics, just have like a sapphic centric night
themed,
or something. Yeah. And like everyone will know, okay, we're going out on this night. And they were like, no, that's not like our client base. And I was like, okay, this is why no one wants to go here. This is why you're losing money. But
yeah, I don't think people really understand the value of queer spaces when they are just thinking like monetarily and through the lens of like capitalism and stuff. But the value is so huge. Like even just recently, I started working with a group of younger drag performers in like a drag school. And the first time that we met, like being in this room where introducing yourself with pronouns was normal. Everybody there was like gender non-conforming. And whenever being in a space like that, where you just look around and you're like, whoa, everyone here is either queer or like with the program where everyone just blends in. While that was all cool, like aesthetically, the feeling of being in a space with a bunch of people who you just like know get it, is that safeness is so invaluable. And one of the first things they did for this kind of a space was like set expectations, made sure everybody felt comfortable. And I'm just like, this is so healthy. And people don't even realize these kinds of benefits are for everybody.
Yeah, it sucks that, you know, it has to be like a special space to get that. But at the same time, like, it's nice that we have those spaces, but it sucks that like the rest of the world can't get the program or refuses to, not that they can't. But I'm really jealous that you have that.
It's been one of the most exciting things. Like, it's just so empowering to see all these like young people who are just wearing whatever they want to wear and having their hair however they want to wear it and using the pronouns that they feel comfortable with at like 18. And it's not like you don't have to get older and get confident. Like, they can do that younger now. I don't know. It's really cool to see. But I think a lot of times too, we think of queer spaces as like pretty much just gay bars. And like I just said, I was in like, it was a drag school essentially, but it's like, it's a program.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many things out there that I didn't even know this existed when we did our last queer spaces episode, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. That was part of the reason I wanted to join the local roller derby team, because I know it's like, that's like a good space to go if you're, one, if you're queer, and two, if you have some bodily energy that you need to get out, which I do. I have a lot of pent up energy. I can't sit still. But like also part of it is like finding queer community, and I don't really know how else to go about that locally. I know there's like theater programs, which we mentioned in our queer friend groups episode. We told students to join a theater program. I could go join a theater program, but I won't. I don't have that kind of time to commit. And same with the roller derby. Like, it's, I wish there were more events, at least around me, that were less commitment, that I could still like show up to and engage and meet people. I feel like a lot of them are like, okay, we meet 2 times a week. You have to like set aside like 4 hours of your time and come every week.
I think that one of the beauties of the pandemic, and there are few, but one of them is that we did really create virtual spaces that were really genuine and purposeful and successful. And so I had a friend who everybody who listened to this one podcast, he literally like in a Facebook group invited a group of strangers to come in and listen to old episodes of a podcast and do like a book club, but for podcast. And after a while, they were doing this every week. I eventually joined one of the Zooms, but they were doing this every week. So then the group got really familiar with each other, and that has transferred. Now no one meets on Zoom. We just chat in group text all the time, but they're like some of my best friends, and they're all over the US, and we're connected as queer people from just like a little virtual club that started. So even if you don't want to leave the house, you can make spaces. Like online is, I think, a really useful tool if you know the right way to do it. And I'm not like promoting like social media is the best where there's like bullying and stuff, but if you use those tools to your advantage, there are so many like Facebook groups and things and little clubs that you can start where then you never have to leave the house, but you're connected to all these gay people.
Yeah. I love that. I've made a lot of friends online, and you know, like some of the longest, like, I don't know. I wouldn't say I have very many like close friendships with anyone I've met online at this time, but like most of the people I talk to are like, I don't know.
Well, so like, am I chop liver to you?
Yes. In this scenario. You're not online. You're in my room with me right now. This isn't online.
No, you met me online. I mean, I know we're friends.
But like, I just mean people that
listeners,
I just
listeners.
Like,
you just heard Cheyenne confirm that she thinks I'm chopped liver.
I mean, I did confirm that. I was just kidding.
This is our first fight. Just kidding.
No,
I was just kidding.
I did my eyeliner. So I'm gonna cry. No, obviously you're not chopped liver, but I mean like people I don't talk to regularly, but like I don't know, like I have friends from Tumblr from 2010, like people.
But are they friends or are they mutuals?
They're like friends turn mutuals or just always like I wouldn't say I have any like I don't know I don't I don't message people first usually or back sometimes. I, like I said before, I'm in my antisocial era. So like I've been in like a few group chats with people I've met online and I'm like, I have to humbly bow out of this because it's overwhelming for me, or I have to mute it. And then I feel like I miss so much. But yeah, I love the accessibility that the internet has given us, especially with the pandemic. And it really sucks that like a lot of these spaces that have opened up have reverted to online or just kind of dissipated as people began to like leave their house more, because there are so many people with chronic illnesses and disabilities who aren't able to be part of things. And, you know, the pandemic, as horrible as it was, it did open up like an avenue of connection that we weren't able to access before. So it sucks that, you know, those things aren't being continued. I wish there was like a better resource for creating groups like that or finding them. Like I know we have like Facebook groups and stuff, but like I don't know, like I had someone before I was considering going to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, and someone recommended me a queer one that's like in LA or something, and it was like online, and I was I was too scared. I didn't end up doing it, but I considered it for a hot minute, and like I know for a fact we don't have that in my city. Like I would not have the opportunity to go to something like that if it were an in-person situation. So it's nice when they are able to make it like accessible virtually.
Yeah, accessibility is huge. Otherwise, how do you find any queer spaces? And when people are not necessarily in the big cities, they are just not, it's not as logistically like available.
Yeah. Yeah. So the groups that you're in online, you found out about them mostly from like Facebook? Because that was a question we got, was how do I find out about queer spaces? And we can talk about like online and in person, I think.
Yeah, I think every group that I'm in some way came to fruition, even in person or online, still came to fruition from finding things online. Or like anytime I see things around town that I want to go to that are queer events, I usually found them through like a specific Arizona LGBTQ Facebook group that promotes different events. If I was going to have an event, I would go right to that Facebook group to promote it, because I've literally as a person gone to events if even like smaller events, like everything like gets posted in these groups and then it trickles down. And then I've also like the drag school that I got involved in, my friend sent me, but she sent me a screenshot. Yeah. She sent me a screenshot that like, I don't know where she got it from, but she definitely found it online if it was a screenshot. Mm-hmm. She didn't like see it in person, look it up and then send me, you know what I mean? Yeah. She was just taking a picture or something.
Yeah.
So she saw that through online. And then I just looked at the screenshot she sent me and emailed the person from there. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little bit of serendipity, a little bit of like, if you're in a Facebook group that's promoting those events, eventually you're going to find ones that you want to go to. And there's things I don't want to go to, mm-hmm. but I've seen somebody promote things like a defense class specifically for queer people. Mm-hmm. And that I've seen them post it a ton of times. And after like the fourth or fifth time I saw it, I was kind of like, maybe I should do this one weekend. Like that's actually like, you know, and so I think it's worth like going and looking up and being like in those groups to just know what's going on. Even if at first it doesn't seem like you find anything, because eventually you'll get a diamond in the rough. And then the next thing you know, like me, you're their costume designer.
Right.
For a drag school.
Yeah. I'm really jealous that we don't have that here. I just keep saying the same thing, but that's how I feel. I'd love to do something like that. And I mean, everything I find in my city is just like through Facebook events or sometimes Instagram, but mostly Facebook. Like look up Facebook events or Facebook groups. The queer Facebook group in my area that's kind of like popping, I actually started it because there were like a couple other groups, but they like seem to be like, okay, so I started it because I was going to start this like queer event, the Sapphic event, and the other groups I was a part of had events, but it was like folding the local gay newspapers and like moms meet for coffee or like, I don't know, stuff like that, which is great, but it's not necessarily the demographic that I fit into. And I just like didn't feel like, I don't want to go do crafts with some moms and their like their kids. It was more for the kids than the moms, I think.
Right.
But like, I don't want to go do crafts with people with children when I don't have a child. So I like wanted to come up with something that would give people who are in the same boat as I am in a different avenue, which obviously fell through because of COVID. And I have not.
Well, I mean, it didn't, I wouldn't say fall through, it evolved into something new. Cause you said it's a pretty successful Facebook group. So I wouldn't, I wouldn't take that as a fail. It just turned out differently than expected.
Yeah. It wasn't what I had.
You still connected people.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm amazing.
Okay. So one of our next questions about these queer events, how do I go to an event and actually have a good time and meet people with all the clicks?
I feel like that's why a lot of them are alcohol centric, so that your inhibitions are down and it's not as awkward to just like go up to someone or dance with a random person. I don't know if I have good advice for this because I am not good at approaching people without alcohol, but I feel like you might be a little bit more outgoing than I am, Gina.
I am outgoing, but I don't always feel like I'm outgoing, but I'm not like the most outgoing. Okay. Like I'm not going to be the one who walks in a room and brings everybody together and is like the life of the party all the time. And that's not to say like never, but that's not what I expect of myself. When I'm in new places, I'll typically try and like, I don't know, you can usually find the vibe of the people that, you know, you think you're going to like. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, when I went to this thing the other day, there was somebody in the group who had an orange scrunchie and I had an orange scrunchie, and I didn't talk to him like the whole time that we were in like the class. But then as we were walking out, I kind of said something to him and then we ended up walking out together. And by the time we were like at our cars, I was like, so we're besties now and I'm going to sit with you next week.
No, I think that's sweet. And like, I like those people that like go out of their way to make you feel welcome and like interact with you. And I actually just read, I didn't read the full study, just full disclosure, but I read about a study where people with social anxiety do specific, like they have like specific behaviors. And by they, I mean we, because I have social anxiety, we have specific behaviors that we engage in to kind of like protect ourselves from social harm, I guess, or like protect ourselves from any like negative outcomes from happening within a group. But those behaviors actually tend to like be a self-fulfilling prophecy that caused them to happen. Like, okay, so I'm like sitting in a corner, like looking at my phone because I'm awkward and I don't want to make eye contact with anyone. Right. And I'm scared to talk to anyone, but I want someone to talk to me when I'm looking at my phone. But really that's like a feedback loop and no one's talking to me because I'm just sitting in the corner staring at my phone. So right. like behaviors like that, that we do to try and like protect ourselves from awkwardness in social situations actually backfire. So I think the thing is like push yourself outside of your comfort zone and talk to people. And I've done that before. And like, I've had people not be the nicest also. But I feel like
yeah.
a lot of people appreciate that. And I know the people like that I've appreciated in social settings are like the ones who go out of their way to like include me or involve me and engage and aren't just like talking to their two people that they're with. Like they're trying to get everyone to talk to each other and bring everyone in on the conversation. So if you can find a way to be that way, I think it is helpful.
I think that if you go anywhere with the intention of trying to meet new people, you do have to just kind of have like a chill and confident vibe about you. Cause I've gone places alone, especially queer bars specifically. I've gone to alone, especially when I first got to this city, and I would just go and kind of like post up somewhere, and I would maybe go to the bar where like you can look at the TV. So then even if you're not on your phone, it's a little more, you're still doing something, but it's a little more inviting for the people next to you to talk to you. Cause they don't feel like they're interrupting anything. Like it's just whatever the bar had on TV. Mm-hmm. But I also wasn't, when I got there, I wasn't like running around trying to meet everybody. And like, I wasn't like acting super outgoing. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of like posting up places with a drink and like chilling, and people kind of
that makes sense.
I just looked approachable and friendly.
Yeah. I've gone to the bar by myself before and like had no one talk to me, but then like, I don't know, before I've gone and like tried to like not be on my phone and just sit there, and like a few people came and sat with me and started talking to me, and like, I don't know, like it's about being approachable. But I also think I'm thinking about like, one, I've dated people who are a lot more extroverted than I was. So like, they would always like talk to people when we were out and like make friends. And I was like, how the fuck do you do this? But then I'm also thinking about like the people that would engage with them. And I feel like in those situations, like the other people would almost be like over, like listening to our conversation or whatever, especially if we're being like loud and not in like a creepy way, but like they would kind of like unabashedly just like be like, hey, like join the conversation. You kind of have to have like some tact with that. Like obviously if someone's talking about something traumatic or really private, like probably don't butt in there. But if they're like arguing about what's on TV, like you could kind of hop in there. Or like I'm thinking about like other people I know, they'll like kind of like tease someone or like make a joke. I wouldn't tease because like I don't like when people get overly familiar with me before I know them and like say something too harsh, and I'm like, you don't know me like that. So I probably wouldn't do that. But like I feel like they would like make like a little joke with someone and like be like, you and those platform shoes, I don't even know, but like they'd like figure out a way to like kind of have a joke, a little back and forth with someone, and that's how they would like engage with strangers in public. But for me, I'm like, they probably don't want me to talk to them, so I'm not going to talk to them. And then that makes people think that I don't want to talk to them, when really I think that they don't want to talk to me. So it's like you have to like try.
I had a drag queen once point at me and was like, you look fun, I like your haircut, you look like you have a lot of sex in public bathrooms. And it was kind of like a read in a way, but I was also like, wait, I love you and I want to be your friend now. But I definitely wouldn't have the confidence to like throw that kind of something at somebody. I would give a compliment or be like, oh my God, work those nails. Oh my God, I love your hair. Oh my God, where'd you get these shoes? But I don't know, I wouldn't want to do that like inauthentically either, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to give a compliment just to give it.
Yeah. And then I think you also have to like figure out a way to translate that into conversation, or else it can turn into like a thanks and move on situation. Like with like, even if you're flirting, like how, if you say like, oh my God, you're so pretty, like you have to figure out a way to like continue the conversation after that. And I think the same goes for like, if you're trying to make friends or just like meet people in general, like, I don't know, you could be like, where'd you get those shoes? Or I don't know.
Who gave you permission to be so pretty?
Okay.
What's a pretty girl like you doing in a place like this?
Okay, yeah, that would be fun.
So I guess this next question then, how do I find friends to go with? My friends barely want to go to my local gay bars with me. So how would they go to like new events and things? And I know it's hard to make new friends as an adult, but I feel like having an event is easier than just being like, hey, we should do something sometime. Yes. Well, this is the something sometime.
Yeah.
Now finding the friends might be harder, but if you've got them, I feel like the event is easy to be like, let's all do this thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely have friends who are like, I don't want to go to the gay bar because that's not where the people I'm trying to find are. And that's like why I go out. And so I definitely like have friends who don't want to go to the gay bar with me. So I totally get this person's point of view. And like, you can meet people online. If you have any like local internet friends, people you think would be cool, you can shoot your shot and be like, hey, do you want to like go to this event with me or this bar with me? And see if they want to go. And if they don't, just be like, oh, okay, cool. Like, or if they don't drink, or, you know, just like give them a good out, but like there's no harm in like asking someone to hang out. But like, I think also finding something else that you're interested in being involved in. Whenever I hear anything about like making friends as an adult, that's the advice. And it's just like, continue to show up, continue to like go fold the newspapers. Like if I were to join the like, folding the gay newspaper, or like keep going to roller derby practice, or go to the same rock gym, maybe at the same time, and probably the same people will be there every week. I meant to say rock climbing gym. I just said rock gym.
I know you meant. I do think that like you want to find people who share your interests, and showing up is really important. Cause if you say like, I want this, I want that, but then you never leave your house, obviously it's really easy to just like do that, but you're not gonna grow that way. And I think if you really are then somebody who doesn't want to like go meet people in public, like meet people online and then go to online events. Like, I just think that it is a matter of showing up in whatever way works for you, even if it's logging into a webinar or something. My friend and I once took a recipe writing class online and I don't know that I got a lot of use out of it, but it was really interesting. I think she got out more out of it than me, but it was like definitely not something that she would have done if it wasn't like a thing we were doing together, you know? Yeah.
Sometimes like even like logging into those things, even if my face isn't going to be shown, it's a little intimidating. Like, and it's better if you can like text someone in the background and not feel like you're alone in front of your computer. Yeah. I feel like there are a lot of things that like Joey, my partner, I don't know why I was going to just say my partner, but then I was
we
like,
we don't know who Joey is at this point.
Yeah. Well, like we took Reiki classes a few months ago, and that's something like I've always been interested in, but I never would have gone and did that on a Sunday morning by myself. So it's nice to have someone who's interested in similar things. Even if it's not explicitly queer, you could maybe meet, there was like an older lesbian at the Reiki classes. So like, there are definitely like different options to meet people who are queer. If you have like a straight friend who wants to go to something else with you. And that was another question we got about queer spaces specifically. Where is the line for bringing straight people or allies into queer spaces? Is there a limit to this?
I think part of the answer is in the question is that bringing straight people / allies. So let's stick with allies. They can be straight people who are
don't
allies.
Bring non-allies.
If they are not an ally, they don't belong in that space.
Yeah.
And being an ally, you know, is going to look a lot of different ways. And we have our allyship episode, our chosen family episode, even dips in a little bit to some of that. But I think that the only line is A, they have to be an ally. And like the limit I would only say exists if there is space that they're taking up that then queer people can't take up.
If it's a limited amount of people.
Like if it's a sold out event and you bought 10 tickets for your straight friends and then you heard of like 50 queer people who couldn't make it, you're like, you're a little bit of an asshole, but I'm not like, I get it also. Like there is probably limited space for certain things, but like know that who this is for. And then if you are bringing people, hey, to support something, and more people means more fundraising or more tickets or more whatever, I'm all for it. But just my only saying the limit would be like, don't take a seat away from a queer person. Other than that, like more the merrier if they're all in support.
Right. Yeah. I feel like some people's like beef with this is that like, they're like, oh, I can't like flirt with girls because then I do. And she's like, oh, I'm straight. Sorry. And it's like, as long as she's like respectful about it, like maybe she's just not straight, as much maybe of a chance she's just that not person interested being in you.
A relationship who is right. gay. Like you might have yeah. somebody who's not available anyway.
Yeah. So I think like, as long as, yeah, they're not shitty about it, that's as low of a bar. And like, yeah, not taking away anything from other queer people if it is limited seating.
Kind of, I want to go into this question because my answer is kind of similar to what we just said for this. Somebody did ask, is exclusion ever necessary in lesbian spaces? And I understand why they asked this question. I'll get into that in a moment. Mm-hmm. But when I read this, my immediate answer was like, the only exclusion that should exist is people who don't support the gay community.
Right.
When they asked this question, I'm thinking it could be interpreted, depending on how they meant it, as biphobic of saying like lesbians only. And if I hear that, it's like, okay, so are you excluding trans people? Or are you excluding non-binary people? Or are you excluding bisexuals, pansexuals, asexuals? Like there's a lot of people that you're excluding if that's the case. And I don't think that, maybe this is a hot take, but I don't think that lesbian is the right demographic to be exclusive. Like if a trans community wants to say like, we're doing something and it's just for trans people, I'm not as a cis lesbian going to be like offended. But if a lesbian group is like, no bisexuals, no pansexuals, I would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And it's like, you don't see bi groups doing that. And I honestly, I feel like this is such an online argument because I don't see lesbian groups doing that, just people like complaining that it's happening. Like I don't think exclusion is necessary unless that person is like lesbophobic, transphobic, you know, like if they're biphobic, like if they're shitty, if they're being shitty to other people that are around, if they're not a nice, accepting, safe person, then yeah, exclusion is necessary. But like I don't think that like this space needs to be strictly lesbian. And then it's always like their very specific definition of lesbian, which is usually like cis normative, and it ignores compulsory heterosexuality. And it's like this very,
and it excludes me, and that's rude.
Yeah, that is rude. And also like if it's specifically referring to like leaving bisexuals out of a group, they're the largest group in the LGBT community. And like most of the queer people and women that I've dated have been bisexual. Like there's a lot of them. So it makes more sense.
Sexuality is what a spectrum.
Yeah. And it's like, that's like the biggest spectrum, like the biggest part, chunk of the spectrum, the biggest part of the bell curve. I don't know. It just, if someone is not like a piece of shit, then I don't really get the need to exclude. I get like boundaries or like not interacting with certain people or certain things, but like that's like a personal boundary, but I don't think it's necessary. I don't know if we're gonna get flack for that, but I stand by that because it's just like,
no, I co-sign this.
Yeah, it's like I don't know
what your life is, not the spaces.
And like, yeah, who, like what's stopping you from, you're technically pansexual, but you're in a relationship with a woman. What's stopping you from going into a space for lesbians? And then they're like, where's your lesbian card? Where's your ID? Hand it over. Like what, how are they gonna, how do you prove something like
and
that?
And also like you said, the definition of lesbian is what they would want it to be. Because some people, I have friends who like yell at me that I am a lesbian, and I have to be like, how do you explain those two dudes I still want to fuck? And like
round down
the fact that I have those conversations with them, I only do because they're my friends and it's funny. And yeah, like, I don't really like hold anything they say as like seriousness. It's all in jest. But like, I weirdly like don't always know how to label myself because I'm like a practicing lesbian, but like if you get down to the basics, I am a pansexual, but in the past I've identified as bisexual. And then like there's so many layers to it. And so by some definitions, I am a lesbian because I don't really ever plan on having a relationship with a cis man again. But also like, is that lesbian? Because I am technically pansexual. So there's a lot of people that I would have a relationship with that other quote unquote lesbians might not, including maybe someone who's non-binary, for example. Right. Or
so like the transphobic list goes on. Yeah,
exactly. I think that if you like realize that the definition of lesbian and all these terms are need to be like more open than they are, then mm-hmm. like why do we even need exclusion in the first place, you know?
Yeah like I obviously like words, their definitions are meant to like signify something, but I don't think they need to be rigid because there is like fluidity in language and culture. Mm-hmm. And also it just like doesn't fucking matter to me. Like I'm not gonna be like, oh, but you were with a man 2 months ago and now you're at the lesbian event. Like maybe that person figured it out. Maybe it took them.
Are we running background, you know, checks like for all these guys?
How are we determining that this person is meant to be there or not?
We need
or
three like queer references before you can enter.
Like, right.
Dumb. Stupid.
Sorry.
It's stupid.
So are queer spaces in general usually open to bi or pan folks?
I actually think so in my personal experience, especially mm-hmm. because you're not walking around with a label on your forehead. Mm-hmm. So it's not like anybody would recognize. And that's why sometimes I just say like, I'm gay, I'm queer. And I don't like specify mm-hmm. the details of that because why do I need to? But I've never had anybody like poo-poo me for not being a gold star lesbian or something, being in right. some sort of like gay space, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. I've never had someone be like, yes, you are meant to be here, but your friend is not. I don't know. Like, yeah, no one's walking around with a neon sign on their forehead. I haven't experienced any like of this exclusivity, but I'm sure it does exist. I'm sure there are like little cliques and subcultures and different queer pockets of different cities. I don't think it's as big of an like not saying that like biphobia or panphobia is not an issue, because it is, but I don't think like the
I've never gotten exclusion. Kicked out of a queer space because of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure people probably have, but I don't think it's that common. Like, I don't think it's like a defining factor of being a bisexual person.
In my personal experience, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but in my personal experience, I've gotten more like microaggressions as like a bi-pan person more so than like outward prejudice, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's just the queer spaces I've been to, but I feel like, I don't know, it's pretty accepting of this sexual fluidity.
Well, cool. I think that's a good place to stop for now. We'll take a little break and then we'll come back and answer the rest.
Okay, and we are back. Another question that we had about inclusivity in queer spaces is, why are these spaces not usually inclusive of asexuals?
I don't believe this, but I do think that asexuals get like forgotten about. And that's not to say, I guess I'm saying I don't forget about them, but yeah. I do think overall they are kind of like forgotten. And maybe that's because a lot of the queer community is sexualized. And asexuals inherently, like, I mean, not that they can't be sexualized, but like they aren't necessarily participating in some of those things the way that it is natural for those who are actively having sex or seeking sex or like participating in hookup culture, grinder culture. Like a lot of the queer community culture is stemmed around sex, which I feel a lot of sense of empowerment with. Like, I like that we are taking back our sexuality and are able to find our own place in what's been like pushed on us. But I think if I was going to say why are asexuals like forgotten about or not as included, I think it's that because of the sexual nature of like the world, they're not engaging in like some of the same things. And so it's like out of sight, out of mind, which I'm not saying that's the right way. That's just my theory.
No, I think you're right. It's asexual people being overlooked and forgotten about and not like prioritized in these spaces. Do you know how they would be more inclusive of asexuals?
I think that's why people should say like LGBTQIA+ rather than just like the LGBT community, or like, you know, if people complain about adding so many letters to the thing, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's like, it's really not that hard to say. It's, it's, if you can say like Call of Duty, blah, 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 8, 9, 10, whatever, like it's really not that difficult to remember these things. I don't know. And so I just, I mean, like, it's hard, I know, to create spaces that every single person is thought of and included just because there's so many like boxes to check off. But I think that's the thing, is like, if you remember, we have all these letters for a reason. We are setting an example by including everybody. I don't have the answers for how to make these spaces more inclusive, but I think just like remembering that inclusion is important, period. And if you hear anything of like, hey, there's a lack of space for this, this, and this, make it. Like, learn, be better every time you're aware of things, and make change happen when you know that there's a need for it. That's all I have, though. I don't, I'm not gonna like change the world.
I was just curious what your thoughts were on that, because I don't know that I have the answer to that. Another question we got is it weird that even though I am a lesbian, I feel uncomfortable in very lesbian spaces?
I wouldn't say weird, because there's a million things of why you might feel uncomfortable. I think I get a lot on my like soapbox about like, don't put people in boxes. Yeah. And we do that even in the queer community. And so there's a chance that while you may be sapphic, maybe there's a lot of things that people think of as stereotypically lesbian that you're not really vibing with. Maybe that's like a reason why. I don't know. I get that it can sometimes be uncomfortable if there's certain expectations you're setting or whatever, but I would hope that you can find a safe space somewhere.
I feel like I kind of get where this person is coming from. I don't really know what very lesbian spaces entails, but like, I definitely feel like intimidated when I'm around a bunch of queer people, especially like queer women or sapphics or lesbians. Like, I, it's kind of intimidating, it's awkward, and like, I want to be cool, or you know, I don't know. So I get like the discomfort, maybe for a different reason than this person, because mine isn't necessarily because it's like too lesbian for me or whatever, but I don't think it's weird. It's also like not common, so it's like a different scenario to be in, and of course you're gonna feel like not out of place, but just like different in different, it's environments,
not familiar.
Exactly.
So I don't think it's weird, but I think that you should just try and find a place where you are comfortable in whatever like queer safe space that is.
Yeah, I agree.
So another question, I'm non-binary, but appear very cis male presenting. Is it invasive to go on queer/lesbian dating apps?
No, fully just no. You are non-binary. You could identify as sapphic. I'm not sure if you do, but I'm assuming you do if you wrote into this. And I don't think it's invasive at all. Like, if people are mad that you are on there, they can just not match with you. They cannot send you a message. Like, just if they're not interested, just like with anyone else, swipe left or whatever. Like, it's not invasive at all. The people that are for you are for you. And, you know, if they are interested with what you bring to the table, they will appreciate you. And if not, they need to grow up, because it's not affecting you to have someone else on there.
Yeah, I think the beauty of dating apps in general is that there is a profile, and that's not just for this situation, but people who look very straight and are straight passing, and they want to make sure everyone knows that they're lesbian, or people who just want to clarify anything. I have kids, I'm partnered, I'm moving soon, I'm not looking for anything serious. This is how I identify. If you don't, if you aren't cool with these things, then I don't want anything to do with you. Like, it's your chance to kind of like set expectations. And so anything you put in your bio and your, on your pictures and things, it's setting up who you are. And like Cheyenne just said, if someone's not for you, then they will swipe the other way. But as you know, two queer sort of lesbians, I was so weird calling myself a lesbian, but I'm just gonna get over it. As two lesbians, I don't think either of us would think it would be one and a half somebody as one and a half lesbians.
1.75
literally, 1.95 lesbians. I don't think either of us would think it would be weird to see somebody who is any gender presenting with a bio that says I like women on one of these dating apps, where I have my thing set as I'm a woman. Like, if someone pops up, I'm just going to be like, do I want to date this person? Because if they're showing up for me, they probably want to date me. And if we match, then I know they're interested in me. So I think you're totally in the clear, and I probably want to swipe right on you.
Yeah. If you're not interested in what someone is bringing to the table with their profile, just swipe left. Like, it's not that big of a deal, I guess. And like, men don't have a monopoly on masculinity. So you can be non-binary and look masculine. So it's, yeah, if someone has an issue with it, just block them, report them. It's just, they need to grow up and let people live, because it's really not hurting anyone for you to be on a queer or lesbian dating app.
Amen. Yeah. Take me to church. All right. Last question. What is the best way to keep queer spaces safe? How can we ensure that they're safe for queer people without being exclusive? And I love this question, because I started off the episode talking about how I was just in this amazingly queer safe space and how wonderful that feeling was. So do you have any advice on keeping everything safe?
Yeah, my advice for this one was honestly kind of a mirror of what you said before, is like setting boundaries, setting expectations for the space, and having a strict adherence policy. And, you know, people are in the space and they are acting transphobic, if they're acting lesbophobic, biphobic, racist, able, anything that like doesn't align with the rules that were set in place, like keep people safe and, you know, make it an inclusive, accepting place, then, you know, they're out. I don't think the excluding someone because, like, we don't know what someone's sexuality is. Like, maybe that's the night that they go in and they're like, oh, I'm not straight, actually. Or like, they're questioning but don't feel comfortable like identifying as queer yet. Like, people are on different journeys and in different and on different paths and in different stages of life, and just like identifying in different ways. And I don't think it's necessarily helpful. And like, some people, when we first come out, we only have straight friends, and what are we supposed to do? Go to a gay bar by ourselves and not know anyone? Like, that, you're never going to get like new people into a queer space if they have to go by themselves because they don't know any other queer people.
Which isn't always safe, which is literally like the question. Like, it isn't always safe to go alone. And so like, the only, again, and we said this, the only thing to exclude are people who are not allies. And that's how you keep the queer space safe, is you like say, if you're not an ally, you can't be here. And like you said, you call out behavior if you're not adhering to those policies. I think that's true even for non-queer spaces. Like, my one friend was called the F slur in a regular bar around town. And my other friend literally like got him kicked out. Like, she yelled, was like, this guy's being homophobic, he needs to get the fuck out. And the bouncers and security got him out. And I was like, that's exactly how you should handle the situation. I'm pretty hot-headed, and I might have punched him in the face, but I also grew up on Jersey Shore, so that is just a product of being in my environment, whatever. But like, that's exactly what you need to do, is like call out bad behavior. Don't let anything be excused, and don't let people like that into any space that like you're safe in. Like, protect your energy, protect your magic, protect your zone,
protect your community. Yeah,
protect your community.
That's great advice. And with that, we are going to wrap up the episode. Rate us 5 stars, leave a review. You can find us on any platform that you listen to podcasts. You can also DM us or email us any questions that you have. Our email is sapphicsurvivalguide@gmail.com. And then if you want to DM us, we are at Sapphic Survival Guide on any platform except for Twitter, which is just at Sapphic Survival. And you can also go and subscribe to us on Patreon to get bonus content, patreon.com/sapphicsurvivalguide. And you can find me, Cheyenne, at Hot Mespian on pretty much any social media platform.
And you can find me anywhere online at The Libra Gina, including my website, thelibragina.com. And you can listen to Hello, wherever you listen to podcasts, for all your Jersey Shore recaps. Season 2 is out by now. All right, with that, class is now dismissed.